Hi, I'm Kevin DeCristofano.
I'm Sean Flanagan.
And we are the Ninja Turtle Nerds, your weekly podcast covering the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comics one image issue this season at a time. So, Sean, what's been going on in your neck of the woods?
I saw a really awesome tweet of somebody just kind of giving his due credit, Michael Clark Duncan's Kingpin. So that was just really cool to see.
Was that my tweet? Because I'm always talking about how I love that version of Kingpin.
No, it was not you, but somebody else shares. Well, it is a great version of the character, but yeah, somebody was celebrating him on Twitter. So that was nice to see some positivity up there.
I know it's an unpopular opinion, but I think it was a better portrayal of Kingpin. I am not too big a fan of the Netflix Kingpin.
Oh, that's absurd. I'm not even saying Michael Clark Duncan was bad. I just thought D'Onofrio was fantastic.
And that the like voice both. Of the guest we have for this week. So without further ado, we've got one more time. Don't call it a comeback because he never left. We got Stu from Stu World Order podcast on again.
Hey, sorry. I just had to jump in at that blasphemy of Vincent D'Onofrio. I apologize, but I couldn't let it stand.
I'm aware I'm in the minority here, and I actually have recently rewatched the Netflix Marvel. Well, by the time we're putting this episode up, it will have been months ago. But it's probably not even on Netflix anymore. But my point is, like, I just rewatched all of it, and I honestly, in my opinion, after Defenders, there was nothing that I was like, and I'm including the Punisher season. I'm like, there was nothing that I felt like I needed. Like, it was fine to okay. Everything leading up to Defenders, they had some great moments. I don't think they ever reached that height again. Just my opinion.
I really like the Punisher seasons, and I love Daredevil season 3. I thought Daredevil season 3 was as good as season 1.
I didn't like what they did to Bullseye. They butchered my boy. What is that meme with the Godfather thing? Like, look what they did to my boy. Made him a cop for some reason. He was all just sad about a girl. That's not Bullseye.
That's fair. It's a different interpretation.
Yeah.
Different.
I don't want to get totally negative. Like I said, I like big chunks of it. I'm a huge Daredevil fan. Charlie Cox was great. I actually am on the other side of the Iron Fist thing. I didn't hate it. I liked kind of what they... I didn't love it, but I was kind of like, this is not as bad as people are treating it. Like, I like...
Oh, yeah, no. Especially season one. Season one of Iron Fist is nowhere near as bad as people say.
Yeah. The fight choreography, it's a little off, but I'm like... I don't watch these... I feel like some people are just watching for the fights, and I'm like... I'm fighted out at this point. Like, I'm like, I really don't care that the choreography is bad. The story is what I'm here for.
The only thing I like both versions of Kingpin, but the thing Vincent D'Onofrio does better than Michael Clark Duncan is just how he goes, Wesley. Like, the way he says his name.
Yeah, Wesley. I'm not saying
make me a sandwich.
Bad. It's so hard to explain. Like, I don't think he's bad. I just honestly, if the MCU recast the Kingpin, I would not be upset. And I feel like there's lots of people out there who are like, no, this is the definitive version. We have to have this. And I'm like, I don't have to. So that's kind of my stance.
I'd like to see them go the Spider-Verse route where he's just comically overshaped and do that live action.
Well, there were rumors that before he showed up, spoilers for something that's a few months old at this point, but before he showed up in Hawkeye, there were rumors that he was like mo-capped on set and people thought that he was going to be made like huge.
Oh, okay.
But it didn't end up happening.
Mm-mm. Wesley.
So we love a good story. Love nothing more than an untitled story. Which is this issue here, and every issue of Image Turtles. So this week's issue is untitled. The cover this time is by Ruben Rude, Eric Larson, Frank Fosco, and again, IHOC. I gotta figure out what that is. Story by Gary Carlson, pencils by Frank Fosco, inks by Eric Larson again and Andrew Pepoy. Lettering, Chris Alopoulos, and colors for IDW by Adam Gazowski. And this book came out in October of 1996. What were you for Halloween that year, Sean?
Halloween in 96.
Curveball.
I'm pretty sure I was the Riddler. And I made my costume.
Nice. I have no idea what I was. Stu, do you know? Probably not.
Halloween 1996, I was 9 days away from turning 16, so I was probably in that I'm too cool to do Halloween.
I think 15 is the last year we went trick-or-treating. Sean and I went last trick-or-treating together as teenagers once. I don't remember how old we were, but we were like, free candy, costumes, let's go. So we're probably like 15 when we did that.
That was the Winnie the Pooh and the Apocalypse 2 costumes.
Oh, yeah, because I had like this like hazmat suit for my costume, and our friend was Winnie the Pooh.
Yep. One of us
by the way,
Tigger,
I looked
I think,
it up
too.
While we were talking here. IHOC is, you were close, Stu. It's International House of Color.
Color. And I was going to say, that was the first thing I thought of, because I assumed they were the colorists, but I was like, maybe they're not. And says, so that's why I said comics. But yeah, that makes sense.
Says, best known for Savage Dragon. They also worked on Supreme, Star, Altered Image, Freak Force, Vampirella, Mars Attacks, and Cyberfrog. No.
Yeah, that's...
That's a bummer.
Yeah, just pretend we didn't hear that.
Yeah. So October 96, let's take a look at what the world was doing. This month in entertainment. October 96 movies. D3 The Mighty Ducks.
Woo!
Which is another movie that I do remember seeing in theaters. I definitely saw that one theatrically. I think that's the one where they go to the Olympics. No, 2 is the Olympics, right? I can't remember. I can't keep track.
3
I've seen them all.
Is college?
If I remember correctly, they did it out of order. So, or what seems like out of order. Because I think the second movie is... Okay, so the second movie is the Olympics. And then the third movie is them going to college. You're right. And you're like, you guys... There's this... thing the audience is thinking the whole time where you're like, you guys played in the Olympics, you're having a hard time getting on a college team, like what's going on here? So anyway, another movie from that month, and this surprised me. So That Thing You Do came out in October of 96. Did you know that Thing You Do is rated R?
I can't imagine why,
it's
but I don't
not.
Think I've seen it since 1996, so...
No, there might be a rated
Maybe
R
it's a...
cut, but it was PG-13. Captain Geach and the
it
Shrimp Shack Shooters.
It said R on the thing that I use for movie release dates. So let me take a look here at Wikipedia, the most reliable source for information in the world.
That's a great movie.
Fox. Where's That's, the rating? It is a great movie.
How we were introduced to
the great band, the O'Neaters.
Yes.
It's a good song, too. Like, they did a great job. Like, that's a very, like, it's a gamble. Because if your single is, and when your movie's about a one-hit wonder, if your one-hit wonder song isn't good, like, the movie the whole movie doesn't work. And,
right, yeah.
And they did it. And I've seen movies where, like, or, like, episodes of TV shows about, like, things where they'll be, like, a fake band that has a hit, and you're like, this song would never be a hit. The O'Neaters, soundtrack, reception. Film grossed $25.9 million domestically, I can tell you that.
I googled That Thing You Do rating, and I got that it was PG.
Oh, okay. So we're all over the map. Why did this say R? Okay. So anyway, my source for that is where I get all the release dates. It's got the rating next to it, and that jumped out to me. So I'm glad that it's wrong.
Yeah, that would be a really weird R-rated movie.
It's just so wholesome.
So, take that, movie phone.
Ah.
You're a website that says phone in your title. What's going on?
Yeah, I went to IMDb. IMDb also says it's PG.
All right, that's believable. So, also that month, The Long Kiss Goodnight.
That's and then a good two, flick.
Two titles that flow well together, Sleepers and Swingers. John Favreau's Sleepers, Rise to Power began with Swingers.
Yeah, was Sleepers a horror movie?
No, I don't know what that is. Was a drama. Brad Pitt, Robert De Niro. It's like about these guys who lied about being molested or something.
Oh, that's heavy. Jeez.
It was a good movie, but that's really all I remember about it. And then Swingers, I'm pretty sure that's an MCU movie now. Right? That's canon.
John Favreau directed it. It's part of the MCU. It's Iron Man canon now.
Happy pre-Tony.
Apparently Sleepers, I looked it up real quick because I was going to give the story before Sean happened to just know it. Apparently it was based on a book. 1995 book of the same name. So if anyone was curious about that fact. Yeah, Swingers is... it's an interesting movie because it's a very dated movie, and you could tell it was made low budget. I don't know if anyone's watched it recently, but I just remember there's a scene where they're playing like NHL 94 and like a Sega Genesis. there's a lot dated in Swingers.
Beautiful.
I've never
babies.
Seen it. All I know about it is I was in a screenwriting class in college, and the thing that I wrote and had turned into my professor, he was reading it, and he was like, "Oh, this reminds me of Swingers." And I was like, "Okay, I've never seen that." So
I've seen it once, and the thing that stands out to me, there's this very it's kind of like what The Office got successful off of, this like cringe comedy. Mm-hmm. There is a scene that is so cringe, it's like unwatchable to me. It's worse than anything I've seen in a horror movie. It's worse than any gore. And it's the scene where John Favreau gets a girl's number at the club. And his friend tells him, you know, call her in 2 days. Like, you can't call her right away. You wait like 2 days and then you call her. And then, of course, he goes home that night and he calls her like right away. And then he ends up leaving like a string of answering machine messages on her machine because the machine keeps cutting him off. And every time you're just like, no, don't call back. No, don't keep calling. What do you do? It's so hard to watch.
That scene's called The Answering Machine Meltdown on YouTube.
Oh, is it?
Oh, nice.
I can't watch it. It's so awkward. Like, because I've been, you know, I think everybody's been in a situation where they're like, you know, they get cut off or they're like, I don't know if my message was clear. And you're like, should I call back? Do not ever call back. Like, nobody wants two voicemails or answering machine messages from anyone, let alone the six I think he ended up leaving. Billboard number one song, still the Macarena.
Still the Macarena. All right. Hey, Macarena.
Video games. The Nintendo Power cover was Mortal Kombat, because Mortal Kombat Trilogy was out on the Nintendo 64. So the cover is basically the character select screen, and it says, increase your mortality. And then it says, in depth, Street Fighter Alpha 2. So Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, same cover.
Crazy.
So were you a Street Fighter guy or a Mortal Kombat guy?
I was a Street Fighter guy just because...
Yeah, Street Fighter.
I never really got good at Mortal Kombat.
No.
It didn't have anything to do with preference. I was just better at Street Fighter. And I know they basically have the same kind of moveset, too. There was just like... I could throw Hadoukens. I could make Dalsim stretch. I couldn't really do anything in Mortal Kombat other than throw the ice because it's the same button combo as the Hadouken. But like any...
I didn't even knew that. The only thing I knew how to do was Scorpion Spear. That was it.
I would get so frustrated trying to like do fatalities. Like I was just like, nope, I'm done.
There was a summer where we kept gambling on Street Fighter games. I was gambling my lawn mowing money. We would all put, I think it was $2. We would each put $2 in a bin, and like, I forget what the second place person won, and then the first place person would win the bulk of the money. Second place might have just got their money back. I don't know. Mm. But but yeah, we would play $2 Street Fighter tournaments.
Nice.
TV events. Big month. Oh, no, that was last month. This month, October. October 7th, Hey Arnold premieres, which we already talked about. It had like its official premiere with Harriet the Spy, the movie, a couple of months ago. But this was its TV premiere. October 11th, Kablam premieres, a Nickelodeon show that I love, and I came to find out later on as an adult, I'm one of the only ones. Not a lot of Kablam fans.
It
was like a variety show. You'll remember it if you look at Action League Now. That was a segment on there.
That was that. The
action figures. Yeah. Also had Sniz and Fondue. They had I forget the name of it, but the one where the alien is teaching the caveman how to do things.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember it a lot because I actually, at this time, was a subscriber to Nickelodeon Magazine, and they used to have Kablam comic strips in Nickelodeon Magazine. October 20th, the Ren and Stimpy show ends after 5 seasons, and it says 93 segments. I'm not sure how many episodes that is, because some episodes would have 2 segments, some just 1.
Yeah, that's an odd way to put it. Like, why would you? I don't care how many segments there were. Tell me how many episodes there were.
And it's also like, I don't know if they're counting. Some of those segments were like a minute long. Like the commercial for Log. Is that being counted in that?
Yeah. Powdered Toast Man, is that a whole segment?
Ask Dr. Stupid is in there too. That was like a minute. And then 13 days later, I'm getting a little ahead here, but Ren and Stimpy ended there. I don't remember if next issue comes out in November, so I'm going to say it now just in case it doesn't. November 2nd, the original Ninja Turtles cartoon ends.
Oh, okay.
So that's on topic. Lasted until 96 here. But back to October for this comic. October 25th, The Crocodile Hunter premieres on Discovery Channel.
Wow.
And there were 3 Saturday Night Live episodes that month. October 6th was hosted by Lisa Kudrow with musical guest Sheryl Crow.
That is very 1996. Yep. I'll allow it.
October 19th, it was hosted by Bill Pullman with musical guest New Edition. This is an interesting one. October 26th was hosted by Dana Carvey with musical guest Dr. Dre.
Here's a combo.
It must have been interesting for him to come back. Anytime the cast members come back and host, it's got to be. I heard, who was it? It was another former cast member talking about this recently on some podcast. Anyway, I don't remember which one it was, but one of them was saying, like, you think you know it because you've been doing the show forever, but then when you host, you go and, like, you're in every sketch, and it's like a completely different thing. Than when you're just like focusing on the 2 sketches or 1 sketch you have in this week's episode.
Yeah.
So Sean, tell us where our listeners can find this comic book.
So you can find this on Comixology and the aptly titled Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Urban Legends Volume 1.
I like it. Let's take a look at this cover. I want to make sure I have the actual cover here because it's been doing, you know what they've been up to.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So the cover that was when this was first published. Okay. So I guess we don't technically know who this is on the cover yet. So you got a weird monster that looks like the Mask, kind of. Looks like Big Head from the Mask. Yelling through lightning. While Michelangelo, Leonardo, and Raphael are kind of having a standoff. That's the cover.
Yeah, I didn't remember the cover to issue 3, but I remember seeing this one in comic stores.
Oh, nice.
Like, I very clearly remember seeing this comic book in Sluggers in Charleroi, Pennsylvania. Does not still exist, but I remember going there and seeing this and being like, the hell are they doing to the turtles these days?
Well, everybody wants this book. This is a hot book because this is, you could put your kids through college selling this book because it is the first appearance of Dr. Wu, the scientist that we're really? Probably not even going to mention in our summary.
That's so weird. So,
I always check the Turtlepedia articles on the comics, and that was one of the things it said. First appearance of Dr. Wu. I think it's the only appearance. All right, so
I mean, it's a cool cover. It's a cool cover. It's got the kinetic energy thing coming back with the Mikey's nunchucks. Mm-hmm. I like, and I kind of dig.
Oh, yeah,
the lightning.
I love when they draw his nunchucks as like basically a fan, like a ceiling fan, just a circle.
So yeah, it's a very cool cover, actually.
So moving on into the interior, we get a great first page, full page spread of what is almost like a hip-hop cover with the three turtles kind of looking downward towards the reader. If Leonardo wasn't crying, this would be definitely some early 90s hip-hop.
They're about to release the hottest album of 1996. And there's Raphael's size again, man.
Yep.
Yeah.
He can't even bend over. He'll stab himself in the leg. So Raph, Leo, and Mike, they're investigating the skeleton from last issue. And Leonardo insists that this can't be Donatello's skeleton because, as we hinted at last episode, first off, he was here an hour ago. And and he's like, that was not enough time for this guy to be eaten. Which was weird because he was astral projecting, so I guess he has a lot of faith that he was doing it correctly, because in my mind, I'm like, well, maybe you were just dreaming that you talked to Donatello. Like, he seems very confident. I was here an hour ago. This can't be him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So anyway, they notice that the skeleton has five fingers and five toes, so it must be human remains, and probably the remains of the cyborg that Donatello fell onto when he fell out of the helicopter.
I like how they deduct this part. That. Oh. Yeah, you're probably going to say
yeah.
It.
Yeah, I like this part where Leonardo asks what the skeleton is doing in Donatello's shell, and Michelangelo says, more importantly, what is Donatello doing out of his shell? Because that always makes me think maybe he's out in his Out of the Shells tour.
I also like that they know it's the cyborg because there's bits of metal in the skeleton.
Can never get rid of them metal, them metal shavings. You know, the Wolverine ripoff from a few issues ago did not have a metal skeleton.
He did so, not. Yeah. He was just Weasel.
You know, you make me think of somebody posed an interesting question about Wolverine. Why aren't his teeth adamantium?
Well, I'm not a big X-Men reader. I'm going through it now, but like, one thing I always think of is, aren't there times where he gets limb, like he regenerates like a full limb that got severed? That wouldn't have the metal skeleton anymore, right?
Yes, absolutely. So, I think typically, I'm trying to think if he's ever actually like in canon lost a limb.
Yeah, that's what
I don't know.
I'm not sure if he has either. I'm going to pay attention to my X-Men reading.
Pretty sure the Hulk has completely dismembered him once and he regrew.
Well, I remember reading on like a message board or something. I haven't read this issue, but somebody said at some point, like talking about how powerful his regeneration skills are, that he's basically regenerated from almost nothing at a certain point. So that wouldn't have the skeleton. For sure.
No, there was an issue way back when, and I think it was an annual maybe, so you won't run into it just in the course of rereading X-Men, but like, they were fighting this godlike being who had this like godlike power diamond, and one drop of Wolverine's blood fell on the diamond,
okay.
And he regenerated from that drop of blood. But like I said, that was an annual, so I don't know whether that story is like in continuity or not.
I wonder if that was around the same time Spawn was fighting God. It seems like a 90s.
Would have been earlier than it was definitely earlier than the 90s. It was definitely 80s. I just don't know what issue it was.
So back to the turtles. Raphael says, since they shot Donnie, kidnapped him, and dumped him out of a helicopter, they're going to pay. And then the four turtles do this thing I kind of liked where they all touch their weapons together to like agree. It's kind of like a football game where you do like, oh, all right, everybody hands in, you know?
Size like in. I'm sorry I ran you through, guys.
So they hop in their Fantasticar and they fly over to Komodo Industries, that dojo that Splinter's most likely at. And of course, when they get there, Leonardo talks like about how basically he's talking strategy. He's like, all right, we'll camp out here and then tonight we're going to go in. Raphael just wants to dive bomb right in and go in guns ablazes. I like where Leonardo says, are you a ninja or John Wayne?
Yeah, I like this moment because, as we've said, it's kind of a tired trope. But the fact that Raph headbutts Leo while wearing the Casey Jones mask just makes it a little more interesting.
No, he's not. Yeah, it's not Raph headbutting him. It's Michelangelo conking their heads.
Oh.
Yeah, Michelangelo.
I thought
Michelangelo
Raph
smashes their heads together because they're about to fight. And I wrote here, like, do you guys think this was a Three Stooges reference? Because it was very Three Stooges to me. Like, they were in this argument. They're about to fight. He conks their heads together.
Well,
that's
that
what
makes
it reminded me of, anyway.
That's a better moment now, because I didn't realize Mikey did that.
And then we go inside Komodo's dojo, where Master Splinter is confronted by Mako, who's that street shark. I don't know. the big old shark guy. Splinter does this aerial maneuver that allows him to break Mako's nose. Because if you remember, Mako was attacking them at the end of last issue.
Yeah.
And he says that he remembered Jacques Cousteau saying that sharks' noses are a sensitive spot, which is the second or third celebrity reference already this issue. Dude, I bet kids today know who Jacques Cousteau is, though. Maybe. I don't know.
No, I chalked it up to I appreciate it. It would be a Shark Week thing now. But I like that Splinter at least was using something he learned to defeat an opponent. Yep. So.
Well, for the kids out there who don't know, Jacques Cousteau was a guy who did a lot of underwater ocean documentary things. I'm sure he's done other stuff, but that's what I know. Anyway, before Mako can retaliate, the dragons from Komodo's bath area show up, and they start attacking him. And then there's a part here I didn't understand, maybe one of you did. The Komodo dragons are attacking Mako, and Splinter goes over to Dragon Lord to help him, and he asks him if he's controlling the dragons with telepathy. And he said, the Dragon Lord says no, but he also kind of doesn't answer the question. He's like, no, they fight for me willingly. And
he specifically says he asks them, but he doesn't say whether it's through telepathy
exactly,
or what.
Exactly, yeah. So he says,
like, maybe he knows sign language that the Komodos know.
So yeah, I don't know. It's a weird moment to me because it also doesn't really matter. Like, it's like it could have been telepathy. I don't know. But he says no, but then he's like, I tell them to do it. So he's not doing it vocally here. He has not said anything out loud. Yeah. So
there's a missing panel of him in a boardroom where they're all around the table. And he goes, so if this happens, you all agree to protect me, correct? I just chalked it up to them being the brothers. So it was like an instinctual family thing, but it's not explained.
It's a spiritual thing. That's a lot of times in these Turtle comics. That's the answer.
It's mystical. Thing.
So before the Dragon Lord can help out his brothers there, he says he's feeling pain. His Bushido spirit is diseased.
Let's be honest. He specifically says, gasp, pain, terrible pain.
Because I always...
Like, that is great dialogue. The next time I stub my toe, I'm going to say, gasp, pain, terrible pain.
And he says his Bushido spirit is diseased and it betrays him again. So he's been betrayed by whatever's going on here before, which we will find out by the end of the issue what he's talking about. But as a reader, you do not know yet. So we see Miku tearing through the Komodo dragons very easily. He's making snacks out of them. No issue.
He's an oddly endearing character for not really being important. Because I like a lot of the dialogue they give him. Like, huh, Komodos taste like chicken, but everything tastes like chicken to me.
Well, you know what? And I know I'm harping on Image Comics for a lot of things, but that was what Image Comics was good at. It's like, hey, this is a cool character. We don't have much for them to do, but we came up with a cool character. So Dragon Lord tells Splinter to flee tells him to flee and go get his bodyguards in Konoich. And Splinter says he's not going to leave. And then Meiku sneaks up behind them. Sorry, I'm having trouble with my notes here. Splinter says he's not going to leave, and Meiku sneaks up behind him. But Splinter throws a backhand punch, like in the first Batman movie.
Just pops him on the nose again.
Yeah, and busts his nose. I loved it. That was a great moment. I love, like, I don't know. Backhanded punches are always cool. It's like the cool guys don't look at explosions version of punching.
I don't think Batman's done that in any other movie.
Other than the first one?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's an awesome moment.
I don't know if it was in a movie, but he definitely did it in the animated series once, I can think of.
Yeah.
Where they were probably just referencing the movie. So while he's reeling from this nose punch, Meiko notices that Dragon Lord is convulsing on the floor. And Splinter doesn't know what's going on here either. He's got no clue. And then we see a few panels of him turning into a Komodo dragon. Doing a little mutating. And I'm not sure why, but Miku is like freaked out by this.
Yeah, he's very upset. Like he's eating them. He's literally trying to kill them and eat them. And he's like, wait, let's stop and ponder what's going on here.
He's so bothered by it. He's like, oh my God, that could have happened in my stomach if I ate you. So I find it odd that Meiko is freaked out by the freaks because he is one.
Yeah, literally, that's what all the bad guys in Chicago in Savage Dragon are called, are the freaks. He's one of them. And he's like, this is Freak City. I'm like, yeah, no, you literally come from Freak City. You're one of the freaks.
And then Master Splinter, he walks with, after Miku leaves, him and Dragon Lord go for a little stroll. And he's asked, Dragon Lord is now literally a giant lizard on walking on all fours. Like, looks like a pet you would have, but giant. And he asks if the Dragon Lord can understand him, and somehow determines that he's just a mindless beast. I guess from there being no reply. He says he's just a mindless beast. So he walks the dragon back to the room where Meiko killed the other dragons, and Pimco and the Komodo Industries executives are there. This is where we get our first appearance. Dr. Wu, he's one of the people there.
There's a money shot.
Yeah. And Splinter asks if this transformation happens regularly. And Pimco holds her blade right to his throat, tells him, no more questions, old one. Now that you know the truth about our Lord, you must die. And I thought this would be a good place for the issue to end. To tell you the truth, this feels like the cliffhanger part.
Yeah, exactly. That feels like it should have been the last thing.
But then we go back to the turtles, and they're outside in some nearby woods, and they've built a little pile of rocks grave. I think there's a name for that, but I don't know it. There's like a term for that.
I can't think of it, but yeah, you're right.
And yeah, so they buried what was left of Donatello, his shell that they found in the alley. They didn't take the skeleton because they're like, that's got five fingers. It's not going in the grave.
It's not.
I just found it disturbing that Mikey, up until this point, is just walking around carrying the shell. It's just...
Yeah, it kind of looks like those things you would sled on when it snows. Yeah. Like... carrying a turtle.
All the panels of them in the Triceraton car, he's just holding it, and it's like, why?
And then Raphael says it's getting late and it's time to go kick some butt. Leonardo says it's time for revenge. But Michelangelo stays by for a second to have a quick cry over his brother's grave, which is another early example of Michelangelo being the turtle with the most heart. And
yeah,
even though we're in volume three, it's still it feels kind of weird to say it's an early example, but they didn't really have much personality differentiating them in the first volume. So I think the Michelangelo heart thing is developing slowly over time here, and this is an example of it, which they hit the ground running with that in IDW when we get to volume five. Yeah. Like they're like, okay, he's the heart, Raph's the mouth, Donatello's the brain. We know how it goes. Later, the turtles are walking through a cornfield. They notice that mice are stampeding away. And right as they start to question what the heck is going on here, Meku crashes past them. Right out of nowhere. And he's being chased by more giant Komodo dragons. We don't see where this started, but that's what's going on.
Yeah, somehow they've all just come to a cornfield and they're just running through it.
And Meku runs right up to the turtle's Fantasticar, and he hops on into it and takes off. And Leonardo's like, "Ah, man, that was our getaway car. What the heck?" he's like, "We're screwed," or he says something like that. And Raphael's like, "Not necessarily." Takes out a little remote control that has a range, he says, of like half a mile. And he uses it to turn the car upside down and spills the little shark man out. Raphael's like, he says, "Donnie was a genius." And then they write, "Choke." "Donnie was a genius. Choke. And now he's dead." Cut to Donatello's not dead. That's literally how the issue goes. Cut to Donatello on his back. So this is supposed to take place earlier, but at first you don't get that. He's on his back, laying in a pool of his own blood there. And he's starting to get his bearings. He's like, you know, "Is somebody there? Hello, what's going on?" That type of thing. "I can't see anything." And then we see the cybernetic gizmos that were on the cyborg. I guess they realize that their host body is dead from the fall. And they start to like take over Donatello, kind of like the symbiote in like a Spider-Man comic. They just latch on there. Which, yeah, the symbiote had happened at this point in comics. That was I had to think about that for a second. So, like I said, that scene was supposed to take place like earlier in between when Leonardo saw him as the astral projection and when they found the skeleton. So, the skeleton that was left, that was the dead cyborg. And now we're in present day. Donatello appears in the cornfield and he blasts Meku with this huge laser arm, and because it's Image Comics, we need a big old gun. And this is like Cable. This is Cable size gun.
Yes.
Yes.
And the issue ends with him saying, "I can move now, but that gun, it's attached to my arm. I am the cyborg, but how? How?" And that's the end of the issue.
And yeah, I think this is, If people know anything about the Image Comics run of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, it's that, oh, that's the one where Donatello's a cyborg.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I knew. I knew nothing else about this run, but like I said, I knew the cover to this issue whenever I saw it, and then I was like, oh yeah, that's the run where Donatello was a cyborg and Raphael had a ripped up face, and that was it. That's just what people knew. Like, you assumed that was the series where they really just put the turtles through everything they could.
Which is funny, because they put them through all of it in, like, the first issue.
Yeah.
They didn't take any time. Yeah,
the series wastes no time.
We still haven't seen Casey or April. It's interesting. They're just, and it makes sense that they want to differentiate the turtles a little bit. So, you know, make them visually different. But, boy, do they ever make them completely different from each other. So, yeah, let's title this issue, Sean. Do you got a good title for this one?
So, I'm glad that it didn't end with the sword at Splinter's throat, because then you couldn't have called it Mazed and Confused.
Oh, maize. That's a good pun. Like the corn. I get it, Sean. The title I wrote was Rust in Peace, Donnie.
Mm. Okay, that's good. I like that.
Stu, you want to throw out a title?
Can it just be Gasp, Pain, Terrible Pain?
It can, and it is. So as far as ratings go, I really liked this issue. I don't know if it was because there was so much Mako the Shark Guy here. A lot of great, like, him chomping away at things. And I like their little Fantasticar, even though I thought the remote control thing was a little eh. I don't know. But and I kind of like – this is another one of those things where if this was the permanent version of the Turtles, I'd have different feelings. But because it's confined to this volume, I can appreciate the cyborg stuff they're doing with Donatello. I don't think I'd want that long term.
No.
So, like, if this was the new issue that came out this month, I'd be like – I'd have completely different feelings. But knowing that it's contained, I really like the cyborg stuff. So – I went a little high on this one. I gave it a 4.2 out of 5. I really liked it.
So I gave this one same rating, 4.0, because again, I think they've, and I'm probably going to end up regret saying this, they figured out the madness they want to weave. And like you said, like obviously right now, if it's, God, we're over 100 issues in, they're still putting batteries in Donnie, like let's move on. So I'm glad it's not something that went outside of this run, but I don't know, Mako's fun. I like a lot of what they do with Splinter so far. Like that whole dynamic is really cool. And then like you said, that Mikey's personality is really shining through. And I don't know, the book is just doing a good job of maintaining consistency, at least. Like, I don't feel like, you know, the guest era or even some mirage where it almost feels like, oh, we wrote this story 3 months ago, we got to stick it in for this issue. Like, I like that the team is able to just stay and do their madness.
Yeah, I will say the image, even more so than Volume 2, this is the first time where it really starts to feel like an ongoing.
Yeah.
Like, Volume 2 had continuity, but because of all the delays and the rushed artwork, I don't know. This is the first time that Turtles actually feels like a monthly book, and it's actually coming out monthly like it's supposed to. Stu, I don't know if you're aware, but we've covered on the show, when they were over at Mirage... You know, the motto at Mirage was, if it's not late, it's not Mirage. And it was kind of hard. It was kind of hard to, you know, put a book together that felt like an ongoing when you have so many delays like that.
And I certainly wasn't buying Ninja Turtles whenever they came out in Mirage. I didn't start reading any of the Mirage books until well after they had been published in trades. And yeah, sometimes it feels like, oh, this is just a new thing that's happening. This doesn't feel connected to last issue at all. Sometimes there's an issue where Raphael gets mutated back into a little baby turtle. And it's like, ah, that felt out of nowhere. Sure, why not?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I can't remember if I started. I know I definitely started IDW right when it started. I have every issue of the IDW run. But I think a little before they got started on, I got started like right before then was when I started with Turtles, is like after Volume 4, Volume 5 hadn't started yet. And what I did was just randomly, I remember I downloaded, you remember you could get torrents back in the day of like, for like comic book readers, CBRs.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I did, is like, I got a torrent that had like every Turtle volume. I can't, but one was missing. It was like volume, I think the fourth volume was the one that was missing, which makes sense, 'cause that's the one with the lowest print run. So anyway, I had the first three volumes, and that was when I got into them. It was like right before IDW started, and And yeah, it's a weird thing to think of what people must have been thinking when those Mirage books were coming out on shelves, because this is a good time to get started. We're Image here, feels like an ongoing. Like Sean said, they've figured out their particular flavor of crazy. And they're going to give you two scoops of it every issue.
As far as reading Turtles, this is going to be embarrassing. So it probably was just a little bit before we started the podcast, because I have all my Turtle books are trades, except Last Ronin's the only one I've gotten as it has come out. But no, I mean, it's probably one of the most fascinating franchises to look at because of where it started and to where it's come to, and to see all of the ups and downs in the middle.
Yeah, I told Kevin whenever he was on my show, I distinctly recall reading when I was a kid the Archie comic series. I can't remember what that was called. Was it Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Adventures?
Yep.
Yeah, whatever it was called.
We've said on this show.
One with Cowlick and Raphael in the black costume. I remember that book, and I really want to reread those someday and see if those held up, because I really liked them whenever I was a kid.
See, here's the thing. we've been covering them on this show.
Not so much.
To some people, I was about to say, to some people, that's like their definitive version, and they're super into them. To me, they kind of go right through me. Like I'll read an issue and completely forget what I just read. It's not a whole lot happens in them, but I love the art, and I love that they go, I guess you could say, off model from what the cartoon show look was. Like it's obviously based on the 87 cartoon show, but they will do things, make them different. You got Raphael with his weird, speaking of Spider-Man symbiote costume, he's got that weird black costume.
The pro wrestling costume he got in the other planet.
And it's actually, you didn't realize you were doing it, but you set us up good for Sean and I are going to be covering more of those next week. So if you're listening to the podcast, we're going to do two more of those next week and keep that train a-rolling. We're going to cover them a little differently than we've been, because previously we were reading three at a time, and we pretty much would both have the same things to say about them. So next week we're going to do it a little differently. Sean and I are going to each read a different issue and explain what we read to each other.
Nice.
And that way we won't be saying the same things over and over again about them. Because like I said, not a lot happens in them. So it's always been a challenge to me how we're going to cover them on the show. But yeah, we'll keep that train moving. Oh, yeah. So that is our show on this comic book. Why don't you tell them where they can find your show if they want to hear about superhero movies?
So the podcast is the Stu World Order podcast. We cover comic book movies, and our website is swoproductions.com. We have pop culture articles all the time, movies, comic books, wrestling, Pop-Tarts, whatever I feel like talking about.
I was on there. I talked about Logan.
You did. That's what we talked about last time. You got to give every movie ups and downs.
Yep.
Tough to find downs for Logan. But yeah, that was a really great episode back in the first season.
I didn't bum any listeners out by telling them why that movie makes me cry either. I kept it positive. All right, so that is our show. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and Instagram for all the visual things we talked about this episode at TMNT Nerds. I forgot to say this last week. If you want to talk to us about anything, we've got an email address at tmntnerds@gmail.com. And we also have a Patreon if you want to, you know, kick us a few bucks to keep the lights on, help us design show logos and things like that. The Ninja Turtle Nerds on Patreon. And we got tiers on there. We'll read your messages. You can see the tiers on there. We do things. Thank everybody for listening. Thank you, Stu, for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I love getting a chance to relive the Turtle books that I haven't read in such a long time.
Yeah, we'll definitely be having you back at some point. And
All right.
And that is that. So we'll see everybody next week for some Ninja Turtle Adventure comics and an untitled issue of Image Comics. See us then.